First, I want to say that I'm honored to be a part of this session today. Although I've not had the direct pleasure of working with Dr. Allen, I am honored. So this project is being conducted in conjunction with the Critical Zone Observatory at the University of Arizona. And this is an interdisciplinary collaboration amongst scientists from different fields who are working together to understand critical zone processes and functions. And when I refer to the critical zone, I'm talking about any region between the vegetation canopy to groundwater. And our overarching research question with our lab group is how variability in climate and lithology affects critical zone structure and function over short-term and long-term time scales. So within that context, I am looking into the effects of climate and landscape position on soil chemical weathering, and I'm going to be getting at that question today using some depth of paralithic contact data as well as some information on chemical denudation and mineral transformations. The second part of my project, which I am just starting to get into now, is how dust impacts granitic soils in southern Arizona. So I will be discussing some particle size data as well as some mineralogy data of some dust I've collected. So the Santa Catalina Mountain environmental gradient is located in southern Arizona. Within this, I have selected five vegetation zones ranging from desert scrub to mixed conifer forest. The geology of my sites is well constrained. It's all on granite, and there are significant temperature and precipitation ranges. So within each vegetation zone, I have two convergent and two divergent soil profiles. When I refer to convergent sites, I'm talking about a foot slope position with a concave-concave type of hollow, and divergent sites are in the summit position that have a more convex-convex shape. And these transects are being sampled perpendicular to the slope to minimize differences in colluvial deposition, as you can see in this example here. And within each field area, I've collected representative soil, saprolite, and rock samples in order to quantify the physical and chemical properties of the soils there. And I'm also using XRD, XRF, and electron microprobe analyses to further characterize the sites. So this is a quick visualization of the Santa Catalina Mountain gradient. You start in the lowest elevation area with desert scrub sites where you have very shallow soils, and then you move up to desert grasslands and oak woodlands. I have two ponderosa pine sites, and I have mixed conifer sites at the highest elevation where you see the deepest soils. And today I'm going to be doing most of my comparisons between a mixed conifer site and a desert scrub site. So some of my results relate back to the general concepts of a hill slope catena model, so I wanted to do a quick overview of that before I get into my results. The divergent landscape positions normally have thinner soils and less water available because you lose a lot of water to overland and subsurface flow. And with less water, you would expect to have fewer mineral transformations and less chemical denudation. In contrast, the convergent sites have thicker soils and more water available, so you would expect more mineral transformations and chemical denudation, or more solute loss. And all of this is dependent on climate and landscape position. So my first data sets that I collected for this project was depth to paralithic contact data. And paralithic contact, in this case, I'm referring to the depth to a CR horizon. The blue line here represents the depth to the soil depth for convergent sites across the gradient, and the green line is for divergent sites. And the key thing that I want to point out here are these relative differences in depth at the desert scrub sites as well as the mixed conifer sites. And we're hypothesizing that this is a reflection in changes of physical erosion rates as you move across the gradient. And that is based on some previous work that my advisor, Dr. Rasmussen, has done in the nearby Rincon Mountains, where we're assuming similarities between the two mountain ranges. These data are for divergent sites, where in the desert scrub areas you have the highest amounts of physical erosion, which then decreases in the mid-elevation ponderosa pine sites and increases again in the mixed conifer sites. And if you look at that in terms of this data set, you can see that the divergent sites here, which would be undergoing the most physical erosion at the desert scrub sites, could be leading to a deeper soils in the adjacent convergent sites. So there could be soil moving from here or being physically eroded and moving downslope to the convergent areas. A few quick things to pay attention to for these sites is the amount of bare ground that is exposed in the desert scrub environment, which could contribute to a lot of physical erosion. And then up at these mixed conifer sites, there is a lot of bioturbation, especially in terms of tree throws. So there's a lot of soil that's being exposed at the landscape surface that could be undergoing different types of physical erosion. And the other key thing to remember here is that these areas have been subjected to fire in the past, so this could be contributing to physical erosion as well. The next set of data that I have to share with you today is soil chemical denudation. And typically, chemical denudation is discussed in terms of rates, but this model that I'm presenting is looking at the relative loss of feldspar in the soil. So there are a lot of weathering proxies and models for looking at the loss of elements and minerals, and I'm using Anderson's approach to the Brimhall 1987 method, where since I do not have my full elemental data set for the parent material, I am using total feldspar as my mobile input and quartz as my immobile input. And the two quick assumptions to remember is that we're assuming that there is no loss of the immobile input, so in this case, no loss of quartz, and that there is no aeolian deposition, because this would serve as a source of air or a positive tau value. So when you look at my graphs in the coming slides, the zero line here indicates 0% change in terms of the parent material. A positive value would be an enrichment in total feldspars or an enrichment in the mobile element, and a negative value would be a depletion in the mobile element, which would indicate that there's elemental loss or chemical weathering. So in the mixed conifer sites, there's two interesting things to point out here. The blue line represents the convergent landscape position, and the green line represents the divergent. And the convergent position shows that there is greater feldspar loss in this landscape position compared to that of the divergent site. And the other thing is this positive tau value here, which could potentially be a dust imprint based on some of the mineralogy data that I've seen. When you contrast that to the desert scrub sites, you see here that the soils from both landscape positions are enriched, with the convergent site being less enriched in total feldspars than the divergent sites. And once again, we are over on the positive side of this axis here, which is again suggesting that we may have some type of dust imprint. So in addition to using the electron microprobe on campus to characterize the parent material, to characterize my rocks, I've also been able to use it to somewhat visualize the transformations of the feldspar grains in my soils. So this here is a plagioclase mineral in a rock collected from the mixed conifer sites. And then this is a soil sample from the same site, from the same mixed conifer sites, that looks like it has undergone almost a complete transformation, where the only unweathered sections of the plagioclase grain are here and then somewhat in the center of that grain there. When you contrast this to the desert scrub sites, you have the unweathered plagioclase grain in the rock, and then you can see that this is a relatively incomplete type of transformation where you just have clays along the edges of the grain and then some in these fractures. So when you look at the mineral distribution from the mixed conifer sites and look at that with depth and then compare that to the desert scrub sites, you see that the mixed conifer sites have primarily vermiculite and hydroxy interlayered vermiculite, aelite and mica, and kaolinite. And when you look at this with depth, you see a relatively strong aelite mica peak compared to a weaker peak here at 35 to 60 centimeters. And this is the same sample that is showing that positive tau value for the divergent site. So once again, this is pointing towards a potential dust input in these surface soils. When you compare the mineral distributions between these two sites, the desert scrub sites have smectite, vermiculite, aelite and mica, and halloysite. And halloysite is another exciting story in itself. And when you look at the distribution with depth, you see that it's more uniform in terms of the secondary minerals. These patterns do not change very much as you move down in the profile. And this is suggesting that this could be a dust imprint and that it's been incorporated throughout the profile, which if you look at the soil depth here, especially in the divergent positions, it's very shallow, so this could be a situation that's occurring. So with the mineralogy and the chemical denudation data pointing towards a potential dust input, I installed dust traps at my desert scrub sites in April of this year, and I sampled them after a three-month period of time before the monsoon season. And since it was only a three-month period, I do not have a lot of data on that yet, but right now I have some mineralogy and particle size data to share. And this month I'm actually finishing off the installations of some dust traps in my mixed conifer sites as well. So this is the bulk mineralogy pattern for one of the dust samples that I collected. The dust appears to be primarily composed of quartz and feldspars, but there is also an illite and mica peak present as well. So until I'm able to collect more sample to do more in-depth analyses, I am using a simple linear mixing model to look at the influence that the dust is having on the composition of the soils. And the key things to look at here are this red line here that is representing the average dust particle size distribution. The blue line represents that of the saprolite, and the green line represents that for the surface soil. And the dashed lines represent the assumed weights that the dust and the saprolite are having on soil composition. So the source of error here is that in this weighting scheme, we're assuming that the dust does not reach the saprolite, but you can see the strong dust peak here. There's a slight hump here that suggests that there could be some influence there. So that is the source of error that is being taken into account. And the other interesting thing is that there is an overlap here in the clay section between the average dust particle size distribution and that for the surface soil, which could be suggesting that clays are being transported into these soils. And when I use this model to look at all the soils and horizons at the desert scrub site, it comes up to be between 5 and 15% of this dust input here. And looking at the same type of pattern for the mixed conifer site, there's a few key changes here. First, this green line is much larger for the clay fraction compared to the desert scrub site, like I pointed out this overlap here. And this is showing that there are clays being altered within the profile so there isn't just dust bringing clays into the profile. This is actually clay alteration occurring in place. And the other thing is this dashed line that best fit the peak here is actually 25% dust and 75% saprolite, which may be a little surprising when you look at the desert scrub dust at 5 to 15%, and then this is at 25. But the key things to remember are that the mean soil residence time is much higher in the mixed conifer site compared to the desert scrub site. And the vegetation here, the large trees in the mixed conifer forest, could actually be serving as natural dust traps, which are then leading to the incorporation of the dust into the soil. So for my conclusions, the relative depth to a paralithic contact increased with elevation, and this is a reflection of water availability and increasing primary productivity across the gradient. The largest depth differences between the convergent and divergent sites occurred in the low and highest elevation regions, which we're hypothesizing as a reflection of physical erosion. And the convergent sites appear to be more depleted or less enriched in total feldspars, which is a reflection of greater water availability, which could be promoting more chemical denudation in these areas. And finally, it is looking like that there is a significant dust input to the soils, not only at the desert scrub sites, as I initially expected, but up at the mixed conifer sites as well. So I would like to acknowledge NSF and the Critical Zone Observatory Group for funding and for support, my advisor, Dr. Craig Rasmussen, as well as students and other people who have been very helpful for my project.
We do have time for one question, maybe two. One question quickly. Thank you, Rebecca.
Great, thank you.
Oh, do we have one? Oh, yes.
So what's the Hoyt site? Oh, so I actually have a slide on that.
So the Hoyt site was actually surprising when I came across this. And usually you expect to see it in wet, moist environments as a rapid precipitation between feldspar to kaolinite. But we're thinking that it's an incomplete transformation, that it's a reflection of the really dry climate, so there's not enough water to really drive this reaction to completion. But we also have to remember that the soil mean residence time here is about 3,000 years, so it's still a relatively young soil. So that just may not have had enough time to completely transform. I have not seen any evidence of ash.